Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. Today's program, we're going to be interviewing Bill Fish. Bill Fish is Vice President of Operations for Reinhardt Racing down in Fletcher, North Carolina. He's also on the board of directors of the French Broad Vignerons as secretary and officer, and he also is the chief judge for the Asheville Wine and Food Festival wine competition. Been doing that for a couple years, as I understand, Bill. How'd you get started in all this?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story, Chuck. Actually, you actually got me started with this group. My family and I relocated to the North Carolina area in 2010. I had just retired from General Motors after 38 years, and that's important because that 38 years of General Motors actually was what caused me to get involved with wine, but I'll talk more about that in a minute. But after we moved down here and got involved with some of the wine crowds, one of the members of the French Broad Vigneron suggested to me that they were going to start judging at the Asheville Wine and Food Festival, the amateur wine competition. And I think you were heading that opportunity up and you were looking for judges. And I reached out to you and my wife Jamie and I became involved that first year. And it's really been quite enjoyable since that time. So it really goes back, I think, to the initial wine competition back in, I want to say, 2012.
Well, you certainly made a major contribution and certainly a major improvement over the wine tasting and evaluation program that I was running. So we're just thrilled that you've been able to do that, Bill. What got you interested in wine in the first place?
Well, it's like I said, it kind of goes back to my 38-year career at General Motors. One of the opportunities I had at General Motors was to move around quite a bit. We actually lived in six different states and had the opportunity to live for 5 years in Germany. And one of those assignments, fortunately, took me to Northern California. And my family and I actually lived in the Livermore Valley, which is home to some great wines, and, of course, very close to Napa and Sonoma. And one of the gentlemen I worked with, after we got to be friends socially, said, "Why don't you go with me some weekend, and we'll go to Napa and do wine tasting?" Well, at that point in time, I was a beer drinker, and I thought, well, this sounds pretty boring. Why in the world would I want to go to Napa and taste wine? So after 2 or 3 months of his cajoling, we finally consented, and my wife and I went up with our buddy one Sunday morning. He was very focused on the fact that we needed to be there at 10 o'clock because that's when the first winery opened for tasting. So there we were at 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning in Napa Valley tasting wine, and by about noon I was hooked on wine in Napa Valley and wine tasting. And after that time, my wife and I kind of made a pact with each other. We knew that our assignment in Northern California was a fixed duration. It was going to be 2 years. So we made a pact with each other that we were going to commit to visiting Napa or Sonoma at least once a month. And we were pretty good at holding that commitment. And as a result of our exposure to the Northern California wines, we really converted from wine drinkers or from beer drinkers to wine drinkers back in 1989, and it's kind of been a long love affair since that time.
Well, I can certainly see how you can get hooked on the wine country up there in Napa and Sonoma. I was fortunate enough to live in Arizona for about 18 years, and I used to take weekend trips over there, not only to Napa and Sonoma, but some of the other wine regions there, and it is just absolutely addicting to go there and see some of the different places that they have that are beautifully made, and of course have a chance to taste all the wines. Do you have a particular favorite wine in Napa or Sonoma?
Yeah, I'm pretty partial to the Napa Cabernets because that's really kind of what I got started on. I think it's not unusual for people to kind of revert back to the wine that got them hooked. And probably if I had, to drink one last bottle of wine, I would opt for a nice famous Cabernet out of their Napa vineyards. So I'm pretty much a California Cabernet guy. But as you know, if you're going to be in the wine judging business, you've kind of got to set those likes and prejudices aside, and really focus more on the integrity of the wine and not just what you necessarily like. So kind of the short answer is I like them all, but if I had to make one final choice, I think I would go with a Cabernet from Camus.
Okay. Good choice, I have to say. I know when you start to evaluate and judge wines, it is hard. As I said, I've participated in your training sessions a couple times now and getting ready to go do another one. But it is very, very difficult for most people to leave their personal preferences at the door when you start judging a wine based upon the merits of the wine itself. So that's
yeah,
very hard.
Probably one of the most difficult things, somebody that's new to the objective evaluation or judging a wine has to overcome. And, you know, a perfect example for me was when we moved south, we were not familiar at all with the muscadine grape. And I have to tell you, the first couple of times I tasted it, I think, in a non-judging situation within a social setting, I was not very impressed. But I will tell you, over the last two or three years, through a number of different judging activities and just through a lot of tasting of muscadine, the Scheperdong wines, I'm a huge fan. So I think that's the struggle that most beginning judges have to overcome, and that is, this is not necessarily about what I like, but is the wine well-made, and is it rightly correct, is it well-balanced, and is it as advertised? And that's something, as you know, that we work very hard with and really force people to kind of get outside their comfort zone and try varietals they're not familiar with, and really evaluate them, you know, as you know, objectively on the 20-point scale that I think you originally modified for our use, that really helps them take the subjectivity out of the evaluation and make it more objective.
Yeah, that wine evaluation chart that we use was originally modified from the UC Davis tasting card, and I have to say the changes that we've made over the years on that, Bill, have been absolutely wonderful. It helps to even make some clarification in my mind about a couple little points that was always seemed to be gray, but I think we've worked through that, so you've done an excellent job. What happens whenever you get to a bad wine, when you're tasting, even, you know, say out in a winery someplace or at a social setting? What do you do when you run into a bad wine?
Well, there's a couple of things you do. You know, the first thing I think you try to do is you really try to be objective about why the wine is not up to standard. Is it because it was just not well made, which happens? And as you know, Chuck, we also do the amateur wine competitions, and in a lot of those cases, some of the winemakers are kind of just learning about what it takes to make a good wine. So, you know, lots of times when we're analyzing a wine and it's it doesn't score well, you know, we have to just attribute it to poor winemaking. That is, the winemaker didn't do something right or didn't get the balance right. Occasionally, and the ones that are the more fun are when we get a wine that is actually a faulty wine. And that is, there's probably, you know, 10 or 15 different faults that we'll see in wines that are really typically the result of either a bad winemaking or poor practices in the cellar, or sometimes the wine has not been stored properly. And but back to your question, what we really try to do is to try to understand what it is that's wrong with the wine. And that's important, particularly in the amateur competitions, because part of what's important for us is to give honest feedback to the winemaker. And we need to help that winemaker improve his winemaking ability. And if we can objectively analyze where this wine is not sufficient, I think that'll help him or her do better the next time they're making the wine. So we really try to sort it out. Is it a winemaking issue, or is there some other fault that has crept into the winemaking process that has caused the wine to not be a well-made wine?
Well, I think that the ability for wine judges during the training process to experience some of these faults has been a great improvement in the whole wine judge training thing that we have within the French Broad Vignerons. I especially appreciate it when you bring in a bottle that's tainted or something really wrong with it and give us a chance to taste it and really compare notes on what it is that we think is wrong with it. So I thought that was a major step forward when you started doing that.
Well, you'll really enjoy session 3 that's coming up then, because session 3 is really going to focus on what I call the components. So I'll bring wines in that these will be base wines that I will spike them with extra acid, with extra sugar, with extra tannins, and that will help our judges in training understand when they're tasting a wine and something is just not quite right, but they're not sure what it is. I think this will help them better identify what the issue is they're dealing with. Is it the wine is too acidic? Is the wine too sweet? Is the wine too tannic? So we'll really focus on that in our training class that's coming up here in July. And then at the very end of the training class, you'll enjoy this. I've bought a professional false kit, and so everybody will have the opportunity to evaluate 12 different types of faults that occur in wines, and we'll allow them to kind of make their own notes about what this fault, how it appears to them, so that as they're judging wines, if they come across something that's kind of got this funky smell, they can go back to the notes and say, yep, I remember that, and that's an issue of Brett, because it smells like stinky cheese. So that will help them as they're analyzing the wine. And again, it's important, particularly for the amateur, because we want to give the amateur winemakers feedback about their wine, and if there's something wrong with it, what we think it is, so that will give them a place to look as to how to eliminate that fault in the next batch they prepare.
Well, that sounds really fun. I'm going to certainly enjoy this next training session coming up, Bill. Right now, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a few. We've been talking with Bill Fish, who is the chief judge for the Asheville Wine and Food Festival wine competition. We'll be back in just a moment. Our sponsor for today's program is Wanda Wilson's Wonderful Walnut Wax. Wanda lives on Walnut Cove next to the steep cliffs overlooking the Norfolk and Southern Railroad Bridge across the French Rod River. There are so many walnut trees growing there, it's hard to walk around anywhere without stepping on old walnuts. Wanda noticed one day that when she picked up the freshly fallen green walnuts, that her hands turned a shiny brown color like she had a great suntan. That was when her slick idea came to her. Most of the farmers in Madison County have a farmer's tan. For you folks in the city, it means your arms and neck are tan from working all day in the sun while the rest of your body is as white as a sheet. Wanda makes her product by gathering up a bushel of green walnuts. She then dumps them into her old wringer washing machine on her front porch. The agitator makes the green walnut hulls release from the walnut. Then she runs the green hulls through a wringer and catches the wonderful juice in a gallon jug. She mixes the juice with some possum grease and puts it in a small sieve tin, and voila! Wanda Wilson's Wonderful Walnut Wax. Liberally apply her wonderful wax to your untanned body and you will turn a marvelous dark tan that you can be proud of. No more farmer's tan. You will be the talk of the town with your wonderful tan when you march in one of our famous downtown Mad Marshal parades, or go skinny dipping in the French Broad River. Another specialty product made in the good old USA here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Wanda Wilson's Wonderful Walnut Wax today at the retail counter of Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall for only $1.298. And now, back to our regular program. Okay, everybody, we're back. We've been talking with Bill Fish, Secretary and Board of Directors of the French Broad Vignerons and Chief Judge for the Asheville Wine and Food Fest wine competition in Asheville, North Carolina. What's the date of the festival coming up this fall, Bill?
Well, I think it's August 22nd, Chuck, but we'll need to confirm that date. It's, I think that's right. Yeah, Saturday, August the 22nd.
Okay, great. And if somebody wanted to know where to go or how to contact somebody, what would your suggestion be?
The Asheville Wine and Food Festival has a wonderful website. If you just go to AshevilleWineAndFoodFestival.com, they've got a wonderful website. Of course, the major event that you and I are involved in is the Grand Tasting on that Saturday. They have a couple of other preliminary events that lead up to that that I have participated in and volunteered to help with. And I would encourage anybody that is interested in mixed drinks, or they do a special evening with desserts. Those are both wonderful activities, and if you go to the Asheville Wine and Food Festival website, you can get ticket information, and those immediately precede the Grand Tasting on Saturday the 22nd. So I believe one of them's on a Thursday night, one of them's on a Friday night, and then the Grand Tasting that you and I participate in and will do the judging for is that Saturday the 22nd.
Let's jump back to the American Wine Society, Bill. A lot of folks in the audience probably have no idea about that organization. Could you give us a little background, a little history, how you got involved, and what kinds of things you went through with them to get certified?
Yeah, I'll kind of back up a step. While we still lived in Michigan, when I was still working with General Motors, we were a member of a group called the Tasters Guild International, and that's a group that's headquartered in Grand Rapids, Michigan. They do a lot of wine-related things, and one of the things they sponsor is an annual international wine judging competition. That's held in late April, early May of each year in Grand Rapids. And so one year I was invited, both my wife and I were invited to serve as audit judges at that event. We had never done that, but we'd been to the events before, and that sounded interesting, so we took advantage of that. And that's kind of what got me hooked and started down the judging path. So I think it was 2010 or so. I was an audit judge for the Tasters Guild International, and thought, well, this is kind of fun. I'm going to pursue this. So I actually was just doing some checking out on the internet and came across a website for a group called the American Wine Society. And lo and behold, if you look at their website, one of the things they talk about is their wine judge certification program. So having kind of got a taste for wine judging, I dug a little deeper into it and found out that the American Wine Society sponsors this program called the Wine Judge Certification Program. It's a three-year program, and the student has to pass each 3 years, and if they're successful with passing the third-year exam, then they're bestowed the title of a certified wine judge. And so I got involved in that in the fall of 2010, and I'll never forget, I walked into year one, and I was pretty cocky about my wine judging skills and my wine knowledge. And so I walked into that first year class fairly cold, and I will tell you that was a very humbling experience. We actually took the exam prior to lunch, and I remember calling my wife at lunch and saying, well, this is not exactly what I thought it was going to be, and I'll obviously be repeating year one if I want to actually pursue this, because the exam was very hard. That was really my first introduction to faults, and that was very challenging. And so I kind of got off to a humbling start in the three-year program. I did end up passing year one, but I was what they called a conditional pass, which meant that I passed two of the three components, but it scored a less than 70 on one of the other components, and that actually was the fault component. And so they would let me move on to year two, but it was kind of a warning that you know, you didn't pass it real strong, so you need to study up on faults heading into year two. About that time, that's when my wife and I were relocating to North Carolina, so I kind of took a couple years off, basically to lick my wounds and take another stab at it. When I did re-engage, I thought, well, I'm going to repeat year one since I didn't do that well. So I repeated year one, passed, and then completed years two and three, and actually graduated as a certified wine judge last November. Like I said, it's a three-year program, very intense, and I didn't realize how intense it was until I realized how relieved I was to find out that I had passed year three. And I think that kind of was a little scary for me, because it just felt like a huge weight had been lifted off my shoulders, and I was a little concerned that I was that committed to something that was kind of a hobby. But the good news is I'm certified, and my certification is good for 5 years, so I'll continue to practice and be ready for recertification in 2019.
Well, I'll tell you, I have to hand it to you, Bill. You've got a lot of stick-to-itiveness. I know that's a tough program. I looked at that a few times in the past, and I just didn't quite feel up to the challenge to do that
one. It's a tough one. I had a lot of people ask me, you know, would you recommend it? And I said, well, you've got to be prepared for, I don't know if failure is the right word, but it's a challenge, and, you know, you just got to be prepared for that going into it. This last year, when I took year one, there were like 30 of us in the year one class. And by the time I got to year three, there were seven of us that were taking the year three class, and five of us passed. The other two did not. So They'll get a chance to repeat it again this year at the annual conference, and hopefully they'll get over the hump. But it was a challenging and a pretty humbling experience.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us. Let's jump back onto some wine questions, Phil. One of the things that most folks don't realize is that there are a number of different kinds of wines other than the typical grape wines that most people are familiar with. I know in the past we have tasted meads, we've tasted fruit wines, which we call country wines here in the mountains. We also have blends of fruit and grape and other things, and we also have ciders. Can you sort of talk about how we distinguish between those?
Yeah, I think that's been one of the really interesting things about being involved in the wine judging competitions, because in a wine judging competition, most times you get an opportunity to judge all those types of wine you mentioned. You know, we're all pretty familiar with the normal Cabernets and Chardonnays, and then we're probably less familiar with some of the hybrids, maybe even less familiar with some of the native grapes. Like I said early on, not many people are very familiar with the muscadines. Then, of course, when you get into the fruit wines, that opens up a whole new arena. Because of your background about how interesting and enjoyable meads can be. Meads are just a wine made primarily from honey. And then, as you said, the thing that's really happening in the area right now, and I think it's going to be a real growth area, are hard ciders. And as you know, last year, we did the first judging for Cider Fest North Carolina. They had a cider competition. The French Baroque Vigneron provided the judging panel for that. I think it was very successful, and I would expect that we'll see that continue to grow just like we have the wine competitions for the Asheville Wine and Food Festival. But, the enjoyable parts about the wine is you really run the gamut. From Cabernets to peach wines and everything in between. And that's why it's important that people set prejudices aside, because there can be a very well-made peach wine that is gold medal worthy, just like a well-made Cabernet is. And it's hard for people that aren't familiar necessarily with fruit wines to get that mindset. But I think our panel in the last couple of years has done an excellent job of really taking the subjectivity out of the judging process and judging the wine for what it's supposed to be, and judging it to be, is it a well-made wine, is it balanced, and is it varietally correct.
Well, Bill, I certainly appreciate your taking time out of your busy day to chat with us today on our radio program. The Mountain Grapevine Show is listened to by people all across the globe. Turns out that right now it's an internet show only, but we're fighting to get the antenna up here in Marshall in order to make it a full-blown FM station. We have the license to do that. So thank you again for your time, and certainly from the French Broad Vigneron's point of view, we certainly appreciate all the fine work and talents that you have shared with us in learning how to judge wines.
You're certainly welcome, Chuck, and as you can tell, I enjoy it very much, and would encourage anybody that has any interest to get involved with the French Broad Vigneron's. We're about to complete this year's training session, but we'll be running it again, if not this fall, as we start up 2016, and we always welcome new participants.
Okay, everybody, that's the end of our show for today.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!